And you got to stop the song right there. That's the moment, people. It gets, well, you know, it's a good song. Go listen to it on your at your own time and leisure. This is William Tin Cup. You are listening to Drive Through HR. Crystal, Nisha, and Mike are out there doing the good work, fighting the good battles. I am here and have a wonderful guest today. I don't know if you've probably picked up on that we have kind of changed our format a little bit, but after 4+ years of asking, you know, folks what keeps them up at night or what's top of mind, we thought, you know, that stuff's good, great question. We'll probably mix that up every once in a while, throw that back in the mix. But we really want to talk to people about, you know, at some point in your career, one's career, you make a bad decision or things don't go the way that you thought they would. And what we really wanted to kind of explore was that happens to everybody. It's happened to me. It happened to Crystal. It's happened to everybody that we know and love. But really, it's the learnings. We're really curious about, well, what'd you learn? The actual what fell apart or the failure or all that stuff. It's interesting to know the context, but truthfully, that's not the most important part. The most important part is what did you learn? After all of that stuff, well, you know, what still resonates? What made a difference in your career? What did you learn from it, et cetera? So we're exploring this for a little while. We're going to see if it kind of sticks, if people like it, if people feel comfortable talking about it, et cetera. And some do, some don't. It is what it is. Today we have a wonderful guest. Stacy, how are you doing?
Hey, William. I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. So we're going to explore this whole idea of, you know, essentially things that you've learned along the way. So before we get into it, why don't you do us a favor and introduce yourself to the audience?
All right. I am Stacy Zapar. I have been a recruiter for the past 18 years. I was born to do this. I'm convinced. I love it, every second of it. Started out in an agency, went in-house after a few years, did that for a while. Started my own business about 2.5 years ago now. It's called Tenfold, and I help companies with employer brand, sourcing strategies, social recruiting, all that fun stuff. And I do consulting and training and speaking around that. And I love every second of every day. And I get up every day at 5 o'clock without an alarm clock because I love, love, love every second of this. And I can't wait to get started every morning. So life is really, really good. I'm feeling lucky and blessed.
And you're happily married, what, 11, 10, 12 years, what is ish, somewhere in there?
I've been with the same guy 17 years now, and we've been married for 11. You got it.
And
we have
two
beautiful children that I share all the time on social, so I apologize.
Yeah.
If you're my Facebook friend.
No, I've got the same problem. Of course, you know, there's a lot of people that don't do that. They either don't disclose or they don't do that. And, you know, the world's big enough for all of us. It's just I can't, you know, it's a part of who I am. I can't not share things about, you know, that I'm doing with my wife or my kids. And, yeah, years from now, there'll be books written about people like us, that all the mistakes that we made. And, you know, we'll be dead.
No.
Are you kidding me? I could have an entire Encyclopedia Britannica made of all the mistakes I've made. So I like that we're talking about failure because I feel steeped in the context of failure. But let's do this. Let's go back. So your career, what's great is you've got a lot of different experiences, both in-house, staffing, consulting. What I love about being a consultant, you get to drop in, give advice, and then get the heck out, which in and of itself is wrought with peril. Just being a consultant is wrought with peril because it's assumptive that they'll take your advice or that they want your advice or that they'll do your advice exactly to a T. So none of that stuff's easy. So why don't we start with things that are top of mind, the failures that you're or mistakes or things that you kind of learned from those things. So take us into kind of one example that you want to talk about.
Sure. Gosh, there's, you know, a lot of lessons. I've kind of been known to, I always learn lessons the hard way. My husband teases me about that. He's like, well, you're not going to learn until you do it the hard way. And I never really listen to his advice. And he usually ends up being right. I will acknowledge that. publicly right here and now. Thank you, Greg, for all your support. And I'm sorry I don't always listen to you the first time, but I do have to learn lessons the hard way sometimes. But yeah, no, I've definitely learned a few things by going the wrong way. I remember in the beginning when I first started my company, my husband was great. He came home from work one day and said, "Hey, I know you probably don't think you're ready, but I know you're ready. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to stay home with the kids." We had a one-year-old and a five-year-old at the time, and you're going to go do this business, and you're going to get out there and start your training business. At the time, it was just training. And I was scared to death. But he did. He quit his job. We had no income. We had no benefits. We were both, you know, invested in getting the website and the business up and running and all that. But in the beginning, the biggest lesson that I learned as an entrepreneur was that you can't do all things and be all things to all people. In the beginning, I said, "Oh, I'm going to train on social media, and I'm going to train recruiters, and I'm going to train executives, and I'm going to train job seekers, and I'm going to train, you know, new grads and college students and business people and networkers, and I'm going to do social media training for everybody and everyone." Well, guess what? I didn't get my first client for quite some time that way. And as soon as I kind of focused in and said, you know what, recruiting is what I do, it's what I know, it's what I'm passionate about, I'm going to focus on training recruiters, then boom, all of a sudden I got my first client, and then boom, 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 it just kind of, you know, dominoed from there, and I've had a lot of success, thankfully, knock wood, in that space. But yeah, when I tried to be all things to all people, I just ended up diluting myself, and I didn't have a consistent kind of clear message. And we went quite a while with no income and no benefits. So it was a fun time in our marriage. and just in general. But yeah, I had a hard time. In fact, I was at South By that year, and I was debating whether or not to keep going with Tenfold or to go back in-house. So fortunately, I had an epiphany moment at South By, and it kind of gave me the confidence to keep going. And thankfully, I did, and I have no regrets ever since. So.
And the epiphany had to be that you were as smart or smarter than everyone else that was already making a career at this, right?
No, that was not the epiphany, and I still don't have that perception whatsoever. I do think I'm a worker bee. I will toot my own horn. I'm not afraid to roll up my sleeves and put in some hours, but I'm definitely not the smartest person in the room. Thank you for saying that.
Well, that's the bit when you walk into a conference room and you can't determine who's the smartest in the room.
That's a sign. My husband does that. He's like, you walk into a bar and you look around and you don't see the old guy at the bar. You know what that means? You're him.
Yeah. Oh, I've had that moment. I have had that moment. Oh, boy. And there's nothing good there. There's nothing. It's like, why am I here at this place? I don't need any of this. I don't want any of this. Why am I here? How did I get – what went wrong in my life that led me to this place? So first of all, that was 2 years ago, and things have flourished. So take us into maybe not the epiphany, but what did you do next? How did you kind of get it back on the rails, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't know. I had a little moment, as I mentioned, at South By, and it had nothing to do with recruiting. We were at this, you know, after party, and there were women hanging from metal loops from the ceiling, and smoke machines and strobe lights and rave music and all this crazy stuff, things that this little country girl, small town farm girl had not seen in her life at that time. It was my very first conference ever, incidentally. And anyway, it started to downpour, and we were all getting drenched. And here I was in front of all these people that I was like, William, you weren't there, actually. I was like, I named about 20 different people that I was meeting for the first time that I had only known online. And I was so nervous to make a good impression. But sure enough, it started to downpour, and we're all at this party, and everyone started hiding under the awnings, and the water was so deep, it was up past our ankles within minutes, and it just was like a flood and a deluge. And long story short, the band kept playing, and I was like, you know, how many chances am I going to get to just get out there and dance in the rain? And so there were hundreds of people hovering under these awnings, and I thought, you know what, I'm not a good dancer, by the way. And I was like, I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to do something crazy and shake it up. So I went out there, and I started dancing by myself in the rain to this music. And thankfully, within about 3 seconds, 150, 500 people joined me out there. But I did something that I was like, you know, I'm going to take a little risk. And I know it sounds crazy, but I kind of feel like that was a rebirth moment for me. I was always kind of a shy wallflower kind of girl in high school and kind of a band geek nerd girl, and I was never the one that would go out and do that. And it told me, you know what, if I just, you know, don't care what other people think, just be true to me, just take a risk, go out there and go for it. That's exactly what I did. I came back from that conference. I felt great, and I just kind of threw myself in, focused on what I believed in, and boom, the clients just started coming. I don't know, nothing too crazy. The phone just started ringing, and that's how I've always gotten my clients, thankfully. But, yeah, it was a rebirth moment for me that I haven't told that story to very many people.
Well, you know, it's the zig when other people zag. So some of that is you kind of throwing caution to the wind and saying, you know what, if people are going to think bad of me, you know what, fair, whatever, totally understand the criticisms that I might or might not get, and throwing caution to the wind. And some people, I mean, the economists amongst us, will call that game theory. Or at least aspects of game theory of you go where people aren't. So if everyone was out in the rain dancing, a thing to do at that point would have not been doing it.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? That's how economists would look at it. You don't want to do what everyone else is doing because then there's no differentiation, et cetera. But the fact that you risked it and you threw it out there, and then things started to turn around for you professionally after that. Who was the first client? Who'd you land first?
My very first client was I did a training class, and I had a bunch of different companies kind of involved in that. But my very first real client was a very small little staffing agency based in San Francisco called Infotech Global Services. I still go up and see them every time I go up to San Francisco. I still do free trainings every single time. I will never charge them another penny. They were my very first client, and I have so many positive memories there. But, yeah, I did it. Went in and did a full-day training on social, and it was fabulous. They're all my Facebook friends now, or talk on Twitter all the time. I go up and see them. formed lifelong bonds there for sure. And that was the first client, and then from there just started picking up training gigs. And then, of course, Zappos called the beginning of last year and wanted to do employer branding and consulting for the very first time. And I told them, I've never done employer branding before. I've never done this. I have a lot of cool ideas that I think would work, but this is a risk. I don't know. And they're like, well, we want to get rid of job postings and we want to do this. Can you help come lead that effort? But that was also a scary kind of risk. And we learned some things the hard way there too. And a lot of it was very, very successful, but you know, there were definitely lessons learned through that journey as well. That was some of the best times of my life and also some of the worst, so I'm not going to lie.
and some travel to boot, San Diego to Las Vegas.
It was a rough life.
With your first client, what if you could do anything differently, would you do anything differently with your first client?
With my training client?
Mm-hmm.
The agency, this is a very kind of specific answer and may not be of universal interest to the audience out there, but I did a full-day training all in one day, and in hindsight, I think it's better to not pour a lot of water on an already saturated sponge, so I would have taken those 8 hours of training or 6 or 7 hours of training and broken it out over 2 days and done an afternoon session and then the next morning. That was a lot for them. They were troopers, though, but they sat there for 8 hours and listened to me talk about social recruiting. those poor souls.
No, I think that's a great lesson, actually, for the folks, for me and for everyone else.
You have to pay for one night's hotel anyway, and you're doing the same amount of training, but then you break it out and you give them time to absorb it all. And this way you get to go out and have happy hour in between and bond, which is an added bonus.
Yeah.
So I always do that now in my training.
Nice. Well, it's also any given human being can only take so much. I mean, you hit a capacity, a diminished return, if you will, but you hit a point where you're just saturated. It's enough. And I think some folks, what they do in training outside of the fire hose stuff is then when they feel like the audience is getting to that moment, they start doing practical like applications. Like, okay, well, you know what? Let's stop talking about it. Everybody crack open your laptops. Now let's actually go do it. We're going to do that for about 30 minutes. And it gets people tactile, like, oh, okay, let me stop listening and let me now start doing, and it kind of reinforces that. But I do like the idea of stretching content over a certain point, because, I mean, most of us, even when we went to college, it's not like you're in college all day long.
Right.
You know, most of it was like, yeah, I had an 8 o'clock, a 10 o'clock, and I had a class in the afternoon, but it wasn't 8 to 5, you know?
Right.
And it's like trying to learn a
foreign language all in a day, right?
Yeah.
You could take 8 hours of foreign language class and walk away remembering hola and adios, and that's it. Or you can take 1 hour of Spanish class over 8 weeks, right? And then by the end, you're having conversations. So, again, I think learning Twitter and learning a foreign language are not terribly dissimilar in many ways, but it's better to have as much space in between training number one and training number two when it comes to the Twitter stuff. So I used to teach middle school French, I might add. That's one of my kind of lessons learned experiences.
Nice.
That's how I equate it. Teaching middle school French is very similar to teaching recruiters how to speak Twitter.
Yeah. How do you speak Twitter? What's the biggest failure in social recruiting as it relates to Twitter? What's just when you look across kind of where we are now as opposed to where we were, you know, 7, 8 years ago or whatever, how do we fail? How do we, as just as, you know, the people that are doing it, you know, the people that aren't doing it, what's kind of the misconceptions of social recruiting?
I think the biggest, I mean, this is kind of an obvious answer perhaps, but we're probably thinking the same thing. But I think that the biggest mistake on social is not being social on social. you can quote me on that. But I think it's a lot of people kind of push marketing. They push this kind of one-way direction of information, but they're not conversing. They're not engaging. They're not talking back to people. They're not acknowledging. I mean, you can't be social if you're just talking at people all day. You need to be, when they respond back to you, you need to say thank you, and you need to answer questions, and you need to engage in dialogue and have these conversations. And still today, I see all the time, you know, Twitter accounts and what have you that are just pushing out content, and there's no engagement whatsoever happening. And to me, that's just not social. So,
right. It's not social. It's marketing.
Exactly.
And
there's marketing
one direction in marketing. all right. So let's move on to the Zappos experience. And again, Zappos is a great brand. They can do things that a lot of brands can't. They always innovating, always trying different things. What would you say that y'all learned? Again, this isn't necessarily about your client experience. It's really, if we go back and did the postmortem, if you will, different from postpartum. Postmortem is looking back at that. What would we do differently?
Yeah, no, there were a few things. I think for sure the Zappos Insider program in general was a big success. We had, you know, 4 big main goals when we launched, and Mike blogged with my boss, Mike Balin, great guy. He blogged about those on ERE and, you know, said these are the 4 things we hope to accomplish with this program. And looking back on it, when we stood on stage at LinkedIn and, you know, announced the results for the very first time, you know, all 4 of those goals were actually met and or exceeded or even greatly exceeded. I think, you know, we had a goal of having more sourced candidates, for instance, and we ended up having 800% more sourced candidates because we had so much more free time, not, you know, reviewing up job applications all day. So there were a lot of things that were positive, and I think it was cool that we shook things up, and there were a lot of successes there. But certainly there were several things that we learned the hard way, and I've talked about those, and I'm happy to talk about them again, and in the hopes that other people who try similar things, or obviously not everyone's getting rid of job postings for the most part, but in life in general, there were definitely things that we learned. I personally learned a few lessons the hard way. When we did announce it and launch it, I expected everyone to be like, oh, wow, this is so cool. You're trying new things. Yay. And a lot of people did. But it was a hard time. I'm not going to lie. I did cry myself to sleep at least once during that whole period, reading all the negative press. And there were, you know, all sorts of negative things that were out there. And it was hard to not personalize that and internalize that. My husband had to talk me off the ledge a few times. Like, it's not about you, Stacey. It's about, you know, people are going to be critical of anything, you know, that they don't understand or they have misconceptions. But that was a lesson learned, to kind of have a little bit thicker skin and not take things so personally. When people are critical of your work, it's not necessarily that they're criticizing you as a person. And it's hard for me when you're a work geek and you kind of so closely kind of align yourself with, you know, who you are as a professional, it's really hard to not internalize that, especially when friends, you know, are writing blogs and different things. I'm like, well, I thought they were my friends. So that was a hard time in my life. But moving on, to talk specifically about the Insider Program, there were four big things that we did learn the hard way, aside from all the positives. And one of them was, you know, we were pipelining every single application or every single person who joined as an insider, and we were pipelining them into various different pipelines and creating these sort of pools of ready-made talent, ready to go if and when a position became available. And we were engaging with those people and the high, you know, the ones that most closely aligned to the types of roles that we traditionally hired for, we were engaging with those people extra and doing all sorts of things. Well, this, the way that we initially set that up, we did learn the hard way that our pipelines, the way we originally set them up, was a disaster. It was not working for us. It was not functional. It was not easy to retrieve the information that we needed. And several months in, we actually did take the entire database of insiders, and there were over 10,000 people in there at the time. We dumped them all back into the pile, you know, we like dumping the Lego bucket out. And then we started building our pipelines from scratch, and that was very labor-intensive for a team of six recruiters and myself to do. But that was a hard lesson. That was a bitter pill to swallow, but it had to be done, and we figured out a way that did work for us and moved forward from there. That was not a fun experience. The mailbag illusion, I have the, you know, I picture Miracle on 34th Street, and you've got the judge, and they dump all the letters to Santa on his desk, you know, on the bench, and you know, we initially, in the spirit of transparency, we had all the recruiters' names, faces, Twitter, LinkedIn, a messaging component, all right out there for everybody to see whether they were an insider or not. And we still continue to do that. We kept the LinkedIn, we kept the Twitter, but we did turn off the messaging function just because we were getting literally hundreds of emails a day from people just saying, hey, I love Zappos, what's up? You know, what are you doing? How's your day? Do you love Zappos too? Like, yeah, we do. And it became like this chat thing, and it was a big, big time suck. There was very little, you know, value add conversation happening through that channel. So we did pull the messaging feature off. But, you know, the rest of it was still very transparent and made our recruiters very accessible. We learned that what works for one team may not work for all teams. We initially had all the job postings off for everybody except for a small portion of tech, and then we learned to turn it back on also for some intern stuff. And so some of the teams still did post jobs, and I think now they may even have more now that I rolled off back in January. They may be posting more jobs depending on the needs. And what you think will work may not always work, and you kind of have to just kind of be fluid and adjust your strategy according to what you're seeing and what your business needs are, and that makes sense. And last but not least, this one was by far the bane of my existence for several weeks and caused me to probably took a year or two off my life in the grand scheme of things, I predict, is we were saying, yeah, no more job postings, woo! Well, evidently on some back-end server somewhere, they were still populated, and unfortunately there are all those scrapers like Indeed and Glassdoor and different sites were still pulling them, even though they weren't on our job our careers page and they weren't being posted by us, they were being scraped automatically. And so people were tweeting all sorts of other people saying, look, they still have 247 jobs posted on Indeed. So I'm like, it took us like a couple of weeks to get that turned all the way off, and that was really hard. Because of course we still had Rex on the back end. We still had an ATS. We just had this front layer, sort of CRM layer on the outside. But, yeah, unfortunately, the technologies were seeing things that we did not want them to see, and so we were being counter to our message despite our great efforts to the contrary. That was very, very difficult to see all the tweets coming out, and some people had it as their personal mission to every day remind us of this.
Yes.
So it was a rather unpleasant experience, but thankfully we did get that shut off eventually. I felt on stage I used the image of Lucille Ball, Lucy and Ethel on the candy conveyor belt where the candy just keeps coming and they can't. That is exactly how I felt during those days. So everyone knows that iconic scene from I Love Lucy, right?
Oh yeah. So you mentioned that you didn't know as much as you thought you might about employer brand, and they wanted you to kind of help them in some ways, at least brainstorm and put some lay down some tracks on employer branding. What did you learn there? First of all, dipping your toes into it, did you know more than you thought you did? What did you like about what y'all tried? What did you think that, yeah, you know, a year later I'd probably do something a little bit different with that, or I'd give them different advice, et cetera?
Well, I learned a few things, for sure. Zappos at the time had a Zappos Jobs, at Zappos Jobs Twitter handle that mainly tweeted out job postings. There wasn't a ton of engagement, and there was no careers presence on Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram or Pinterest or anywhere else. It was really very little careers presence out there on social. So we built that whole thing up from scratch, and that was a lot of fun because I do know social, and I love it, and it's in my blood. So for me, that was, even though I'd never done it for a brand necessarily, it was something that worked out really well. We set up a rotational program, so each week a different recruiter was the voice of Inside Zappos on social media, and they were blogging, and they got to tell their story, and all the content came from them, and that was really, really cool, too. It wasn't me tweeting on behalf of Zappos all day, and we actually had our actual recruiters, we had our interns even out there tweeting on behalf of the brand, and that was a lot of fun. So as far as lessons learned, we only had six recruiters, so, and we had people from the business units that were partnering with us in that effort and sharing that kind of insights from the business unit. But yeah, it was good. We had a blog that we started that, again, were recruiters mostly. We had some people from the external audiences or the business units rather, kind of sharing stuff too. But yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. We launched webinars. We did Google Hangouts. We did tweet chats. We did internal events. We did external events. All sorts of fun things. We just kind of tried things that we weren't sure how they were going to turn out. And, some of them went more smoothly than others. We had an ice cream social that we invited 350 people in Vegas to come eat ice cream with us, and that was it. Don't bring a resume. Just come talk to us. I learned in hindsight that it's really not good to have 350 people lined up signing release forms in case their picture was used online in 120 degrees sweltering heat when they dressed up for what to them was like a career fair. That was a lesson learned. While their ice cream was melted down their arm. But you know what? Everybody got in. No one really cared about, we had a fun time. Everyone laughed it off. And now we know to send out those forms beforehand so they can show up and just hand it to us. So, there's things that you learn that I can't even plan a 6-year-old's birthday party without panicking. So to have an event for 350 people in Las Vegas was a whole other experience. Heather Bussing was there helping me hang up signs, and she was a lifesaver that day. I'll always remember that. Good old Heather. For anyone in the audience out there that knows Heather, I'm sure you feel the same affinity toward her that I do. So, affection. Anyway.
So, yeah. Let's go meta with employer brand for a second, like we did with Twitter and social recruiting. Now I would say that you're an expert because, why not? Why not be an expert?
I do not call myself an expert, but thank
why?
You. I do not call myself an expert.
Hold on, let me get my anointing. You are now an expert. What do you think what do you think we get right? What do you think we get wrong about the state of kind of employer branding today?
Oh, gosh, I could go on all day about this one. I have a lot of ideas around this. I think in general, I think we still think like recruiters who happen to be doing branding. We don't think like marketers yet. Even myself, I need to challenge myself to just raise the bar higher. I think that we need to be more creative. I think we need to have really targeted campaigns. I think we don't need to go for the low-lying fruit and share the same mundane content all the time. Like, oh, we have matching 401k and medical dental vision. Well, guess what? So does everybody. oh, we have ping pong and foosball. Yeah, so does everybody. Like, let's really take it up a notch. Like, what are our differentiators? What makes us different as an employer versus the next guy? And maybe we're not Google, and maybe we're not, maybe we're not Facebook, and maybe we can't compete with those companies for certain types of talent. But there are people that would rather work for our company, even if we're small or a startup or not as well known, versus those companies. And why is that? We need to articulate and figure out why the people that work for us chose to work for us, why they're happy, what is their value system, what's important to them, what about our environment, our culture, our people really speaks to them, and get those messages pushed out, not trying to compete with everybody else just because that's what everyone else is doing. So highlighting the uniqueness and the differentiators and the special, the things that make your company different versus just sugarcoating all day about benefits and perks and, oh, we did a walk-a-thon and, oh, we have, you know, we have, you know, free snacks. Like, enough of all that. Let's really get down to the work that's being done, the values of that organization, who the people are, get their voices pushed out. I think that's the biggest mistake we make in employer branding right now.
How close should a brand be to authentic and genuine?
I didn't understand the question. I didn't hear what you said. Sorry, say it one more time.
So, no worries. How close should a brand be to authentic and genuine?
I think as close as possible. I mean, even if there are things that aren't great about your company, I'm not saying that you need to go out and say, you know, we suck and we work till 10 every night. Like, I'm not saying that you need to highlight the negative, but I think that the more true you can be about, hey, these are our strengths, these are some of the things that are challenging. I think if you can speak honestly about it, you add a lot of credibility to the content that you're pushing out in general. I also think that, you know, even at Zappos, I'll be honest, I loved that company and I loved that culture and I love those people. But I don't know that I could work there every day if I was on site. It's very chaotic. There are parades coming through. There's music blasting. There's constant chaos. And it is. It's what it is. That is the culture. I'm very, like, easily distracted. I work from home. It's deathly silent in my house. And I work very, very focused. But I tried to push out as part of our content some of the crazy and some of the, like, constant noise and the, you know, the shake weights and the Khalees singing, you know, Milkshake and on full volume, and so that people know, hey, some people, that is not going to work for them, and they might need a more buttoned-up culture, or they might need a little more structure, or they might need to not have constant distraction. And I tried to push that out because while that appeals to some people, that definitely doesn't appeal to others. A little self-selection in an employer brand process is not a bad thing if it saves everyone time in the long run, right?
Right. So you did start with, you know, we suck. Okay, I got that one. But we work till 10. Why wouldn't you, if that's the reality, again, if that's the reality, you know, we do work till 10. Marriages get, you know, devolve and dissolve. but we do work till 10. Why wouldn't you tell people about that?
I didn't say I wouldn't talk about it. I just wouldn't lead with that, you know. But I don't think it's a bad thing to say. I wouldn't like, here's a blog post about how we work late every day. Done. I would take that, and I wouldn't necessarily hide it. If you work long hours, that needs to come up during the interview process, and the earlier in the process these things come up, the better. I think you can talk about it, but you say why. You know what? We're in a crunch time. We're a startup. We're all heavily invested. We need to make it through this round. We need to whatever. We all have so much skin in the game here. Like, we do work late, but guess what? We get every other Friday, you know, to go do this. Or, you know, there are always trade-offs to any negative, and or a reason behind it that makes sense. And if people really care about the product and the vision and the success of the company, and they've got stock or whatever it is, there's a reason that people do it. Otherwise, they would leave. And you just need to counter the negative with some of the reasons why. And people will either say no way, or they'll be like, all right, I get it. That's not a big deal to me. I mean, I've worked for a couple of micromanagers in my day, and everyone else would either quit or leave or roll out or complain or bitch or moan. I was fine with it. I didn't mind being micromanaged because I was always like the little worker bee, goody-goody, and I was like, oh, anyone ever looked over my shoulder, I was like, here you go, it's all documented. Like, it didn't bother me. Other people, it drove them crazy. I'm not saying that I'm like a better worker than most people. I'm just saying I was always a goody-goody rule follower, you know, always did all my documentation in the ATF. But there are certain things that are not appealing to some people, and some people, it isn't that big a deal to them, or working late. I don't mind working long hours. It's driven my husband crazy over the years, and he's, you know, given me a few ultimatums over the years.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. So to some people, though, it is. So I don't think it's a problem to mention it and to talk about it and explain the why. If there are bad things about your culture, people are reading about it on Glassdoor anyway. You might as well talk about it, because otherwise they're going to assume the worst.
So advice you'd give your younger self. So go back, high school, college. Let's do after college, just to make it easier. So say you go through that a whole bit. You've made some mistakes, but let's just say that you're thinking about the future. What advice would you give yourself now, knowing what you know and having wisdom?
I mean, for me, it's a confidence issue. I mean, I've, like I said, for me, it would just be not believing in myself. I think that throughout my whole career, a lot of people, I mean, this sounds like a really cheesy canned answer. God, it sounds horrible, but it's true. I mean, I'm being completely honest with you. Other people are always like, you can do it, Stacey. My husband's like, you've got this. I'm like, no, I can't do it. I think if I just kind of believed in myself a little bit and just put myself out there more, like I said, I had that, you know, Stacey 2.0 moment at South By. But I think just learning to have a little confidence and realizing, you know, Dwayne Lay was the person who told me this. We were sitting in the airport lounge right after South By, and his words stuck with me ever since. But he said to me, he's like, the other people out there that are succeeding, they're not better than you. They're not smarter than you. They just took action and did it. And that was such great advice. I mean, that also really stuck with me after that conference. And I think that all the time. So I think in hindsight, I wish that I had had more confidence and that I had not let my kind of inner self voice tell me that I wasn't good enough or I wasn't smart enough or I couldn't do it or it was too hard or it was too new or it was too risky. Just go out and take a chance. I mean, honestly, every big risk I've taken in my life has ended up paying off. And I wish that I had taken more risks earlier in my career. That's all. I waited till I was 40 to start my own business. You know, what a waste. I wasted good years that I could have been doing this job that I absolutely love. Not that I didn't love recruiting, but still, you know.
Right. No, I totally get it. Let me ask you brought up Glassdoor, and I want to kind of get back to that. LinkedIn, Facebook, Glassdoor, there's about 80 different parts of kind of an employer brand. What do you think the future of Glassdoor is related to a company's employer brand? What do you think that, what are those two, if you were kind of forecasting the next 5-10 years, what does that look like?
This is really interesting. Yeah, I was just having this conversation 2 days ago. It's hilarious that you bring this up. I am personally really into Glassdoor right now. I am thinking about it. I'm sleeping about it, dreaming about it. It's in my head all the time right now. Glassdoor is a big thing for me right now because it's kind of, for me, the intersection of the three things that I care most about right now as a professional. You know, it's the intersection of course, employer brand, right? But it's also the intersection of employee engagement. And it's also the intersection of candidate experience. And those three things are the three things that I care about, that I am passionate about, that I am super inquisitive about, I'm constantly reading about. You know, speaking about all those fun things. Like, I think that if you don't have a great Glassdoor strategy, and I think a great Glassdoor strategy is three-pronged. Do you want me to real quick tell you what I think about that? I think that every company needs to be thinking about the content that's on their page, that they're pushing out through status updates, et cetera. They need to be thinking about their response strategy. Who's responding to reviews by employees? Who's responding to reviews by candidates who interview? And then the last piece, of course, is the employee engagement piece, right? How on candidate engagement, how are you getting people to provide feedback and encouraging them to share their voice, whether they're candidates or employees? And there are a number of really cool things that you can do to get folks involved. And otherwise, you've got this sort of bell curve of reviews. You've got the people that really, really love their job, the cheerleaders, and then you've got the really people who really, really hate their job or hated their job and left, and they're dumping on the company. But everyone in between who's pretty happy, still employed there and doing their thing, like those people typically don't think to go out and provide a Glassdoor review. So what are you doing to activate that population? And I have a lot of cool ideas around that. Again, haven't yet tried them out, sort of like the Zappos days, but I've been reading about it and talking to a lot of people about what's worked for them and what hasn't. And I think that's a really exciting kind of area to get into. So I'm kind of, you know, obsessing on Glassdoor these days, and I've got roadmaps kind of drawn up, and I'm constantly brainstorming about it. I think it's really, really integral part of any company's employer brand.
So if I told you...
And it's going to keep getting bigger and bigger. I think they're definitely on the upswing as far as the company is concerned.
Okay, so if I told you that right now you can review the CEO, you can review the company, and in the future you could review the recruiter, the hiring manager, and or your boss, would I be crazy, or do you think that's the future?
I don't know what their vision is. I don't know if we need that level of detail as part of the education process. You know, I don't know that any one recruiter's behavior needs to be called out specifically on Glassdoor. I think the overall recruitment process, if it's broken, it's broken. And if there are gaps in it, it needs to be identified. I don't know if it needs to become like Rate My Teacher or Rate My Professor. Remember that website back in the late 90s or whatever it was, or like the early 2000s. Oh my gosh, all the poor professors were getting called out. But I don't know if it needs to be on a name by name basis. But I do think that, you know, perhaps at a team level or a location level, because let's face it, each team, each location, each company has their own brand, their own culture, their own dynamic. And like I said, the more information that candidates can have early on in the process, it's going to help everybody at the end of the day save time. But yeah, I don't know. I bet a lot of companies would be shaking in their boots if that was going to be the reality. I don't know that I recommend quite that level of detail. But who knows?
Yeah,
maybe that's what they're planning.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because
it's an interesting
you
question,
hear the rhetoric. Sure. Yeah, the rhetoric that comes out of HR is that people don't leave companies, they leave bad bosses. And if that is indeed true, so there's a lot of things that come out of HR that are not true, but if that is indeed true, then why would we get to a point where we rated bad bosses?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't really know that I have a really strong opinion on that. I think one person's bad boss might not be another person's bad boss and vice versa. I think
that's
it's a little
point.
Bit of a subjective thing. I've had bosses that I loved. In fact, my favorite professor ever was like everyone else's least favorite. I loved Professor Fralin, and everyone else called him Galen Fralin, but I had an A+. I loved that guy. but same thing with bosses, right? There were bosses that I think, you know, resonate with certain employees and not others. And there's some that are drivers and pushers, and the people that don't want to be driven and pushed are going to rebel and not like that. I don't know. I think, and maybe that same person in a different context or a different company or a different culture could really, really excel. And I don't know that we need to, you know, place that stigma and that label on them as a people manager just because certain employees, I don't know. I feel like that's a slippery slope. I'm not really feeling that one. That's my own opinion,
yeah.
Though.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I really like the one person's bad manager is another person's great manager. I think there's subjective criteria in there, and then there are things that aren't subjective. So it's probably you start with the things that aren't subjective. This person curses a ton, so it might not be a bad boss.
I personally like that, yeah.
Me too. That would be a great boss for me.
You and me both. You're just making my point, William.
but there are things that would totally be objective, and it'll be interesting to see kind of where they go. I think they'll IPO, you know, within at least the next 6-9 months, they'll go public, and then that'll create a new pressure on them. So in the next 2 minutes, I want to talk candidate experience, because I know that you've been interested in this and you care about this concept. What do you think the next couple of years looks like in the development of the candidate experience?
Gosh, I can think of 101 things that need to develop. I don't know that I see a lot of change happening in this space quite yet. I do love the fact that the Candidate Experience Awards are out there and the Candy Council doing their thing to advocate for candidate experience. I always speak to it every time I'm on stage. I try to remind people that this is an integral part of what we do. We're not selling cars here. We're dealing with people's lives. We're affecting their spouses' lives, their children's lives, where they live, where they go to college. I mean, this has long-lasting effects, how we're treating these folks. And we're dealing with real, real people. And it's appalling to me to see the way that candidates are treated in a lot of cases. It's just, it makes my blood boil. I just wrote that on Facebook this morning on a post about candidate experience. But where do I see it going? I think that for sure, I think technologies need to improve. About the application process is abysmal 99% of the time. I think the feedback mechanism is by far the number one thing that needs to be addressed. Candidates need timely feedback. They need communication. They need to be closed out, for God's sake, whether they've had an interview or not. Applicants and candidates need to be treated equally as well, not just people you're interviewing or plan to hire. Are these changes happening? I hope so. I believe that the Candidate Experience Awards, like I said, is doing a good job of advocating for those. This is my soapbox, and this is what gets me red in the face talking about this topic. I've always been passionate about it since my very first job. Every single candidate that's applied to any job that I've had since probably 2005-ish has gotten a response from me to at least say that, hey, we filled this job. I'm really sorry, you know, we've promoted them from within, we're not going to be moving forward at this point, but here's how to stay in touch with me down the road for either jobs at my company or any other company. If you want an introduction to another recruiter, I'm happy to do that, et cetera, et cetera. So I've cared about this for a very, very long time, and I hope it continues to be more of a priority as we move forward in the next few years.
Awesome. That's it. We're out of time. Stacy, as always, wonderful to talk to you. Thank you for dropping knowledge with the audience. Thanks, everybody, listening to Drive Through HR today. TGIF, have a wonderful weekend. And thank you again, Stacy.
Early in the morning, rising to the street.
That was loud. Sorry about that.
Hello?
I got you.
You got me?
Thank you, Stacy. I do. I got
I didn't really talk that much about my failures. I feel bad. I hope I didn't sound too geeky or Pollyanna-ish.
No, you were fine. Don't
I had a whole
think
list
about
of failures I was going to talk about. Yeah. I just didn't get to.
Well, yeah,
I did.
That's the next show. That's the next show.
Oh, lovely.
Right?
All of Stacy's failures. Hashtag Stacy's a failure.
Well, this is part one, people. No, this is a 5-part series. We're going to take an entire week and go into all of these. Just kidding. Just kidding. Hey, listen, have a great weekend and a great family vacation next week.
You too, sweetie. Thanks so much. It was great hearing your voice. You're awesome. I will never forget the day that you called me about that whole Zappos experience and all the negativity and I was crying on your shoulder too. You and Heather got to hear me cry, but thank you. I will forever, ever remember that day and that support that you provided. I just want you to know that it did not go unnoticed. So.
No worries. Well, thank you. Thank you again for the time. I know how busy you are.
You got it. All right, buddy. Have a good weekend yourself. Nice seeing your voice.
All right.
Nice hearing your voice. Bye.